Coast Guard without funding?
Portions of it. We're keeping some of the salaries paid, but they're...
So there's no funds in the appropriation bill for the Coast Guard. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Because your agency is not being funded. It's the one part of the appropriations bill where we haven't agreed on funding. Is that correct?
Correct.
So FEMA, no money, right? Coast Guard, no money. Really? Really? ICE? They have money because of the bill we did before. The Secret Service, are these people being paid?
Yes, they are.
They're being paid, but do we have money?
Our law enforcement is paid, but their resources, their administrative staff,
they're not being paid out of appropriated funds this year, right?
Correct.
So in the appropriations process, we've got no new money for the Secret Service. Does that make any sense to anybody in America? Can we not understand America is under siege now, likely to be attacked because radical Islam is under siege and they're going to hit back? And we're sitting here looking at each other and not funding DHS. If you want to reform ICE, great. Count me in. If you want to make DHS more professional, count me in. If you want to investigate bad shootings, count me in. If you don't want to do away with sanctuary cities, count me out. What's a sanctuary city?
A city that protects itself from our federal immigration efforts in their city.
Are there sanctuary cities and states in this country?
Yes, there are.
Look at this chart. There are 200-plus sanctuary counties. There are 12 sanctuary states. 8 million illegals reside in sanctuary jurisdictions in defiance of federal law. A sanctuary city refuses to turn over to the federal government people that are subject to deportation. Is that correct?
Correct.
They make a choice, these sanctuary states, counties, cities, not to cooperate with federal officials, and the laws have been on the book long before Donald Trump, right?
Correct.
Do you think it would be good for the country to abolish sanctuary cities and states?
I do.
Do you believe as long as they exist, it will be a magnet for future immigration, illegal immigration?
Yes, I do.
So if you're a legal immigrant and you can get to one of these sanctuary cities, states, or towns, you believe you'll never leave. Until you fix this, you're going to have illegal immigrant magnets. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
Would you urge the Congress to abolish sanctuary cities?
Yes, I would, sir.
And sanctuary states. When it comes to the threat level against our homeland, how would you characterize it right now?
Right now, I would say, sir, that we should have our every effort within the Department of Homeland Security out protecting people 24/7, because we face not just enemies from overseas that threaten our way of life and our American values. The Biden administration let them here. They let them in our borders. They're in our hometowns. They are unvetted. Thousands and thousands of people that are dangerous criminals, gang members, known
Who's
and suspected terrorists.
Who's this guy?
He is the man that conducted the horrific act down in Austin.
Okay, what country did he come from?
I think Senegal.
Okay, and he was killed in Austin, Texas, right?
He was.
And the shirt said what?
Property of Allah.
Property of Allah. And when you went to his house, you found a what kind of flag?
Iranian flag.
Iranian flag. Wonder how many people are like that here waiting to pounce. And DHS doesn't have appropriated funds. This is insane. There are more people like this. We obliterated our borders. 1.7 million people came into this country from countries that were designated to be a problem. Special interest aliens. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
So 1.7 million came from countries that would make you a special interest alien because the nature of the country. Libya, Nigeria, North Korea, Afghanistan, China, Cuba. Do you know where those 1.7 million people are?
Not all of them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where they are either. But they let them in. We don't know where they are. They came from countries that are so dicey. We made you a special interest alien if you came from those countries. So we're having a hearing here. I'd like to make ICE more professional. I'd like to make sure if there was a bad shooting, it's documented as such and people pay a price. But I will not apologize.
All right, folks, we've got more
anybody
to discuss in just a little bit. It's a bad day for me. I agree with Lindsey Graham. I'll be back with more.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com. And I salute you for your support.
If it matters to America, it matters here. This is the American Journal with Brianna Morello, live streaming on band.video next around the globe.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're jumping on with us in the second hour of the program. As you may have heard, we were listening in on Lindsey Graham grilling Kristi Noem a little bit, but not in regards to Kristi Noem doing a bad job over at DHS. No, he wants to know about the suspected and known terrorists that were released into the country under the Biden regime. That's a very important question, and a question that I've been asking DHS about for months now, DHS threw some numbers my way over the weekend, and the numbers are absolutely horrifying, because when you compare it to what Joe Ken has put out, we've only captured about 7.8% of the known and suspected terrorists that were released into the country under the Biden administration. And again, that number is significantly high because those are the known amounts of suspected and known terrorists. Again, there's a lot of unknown factors here, and obviously we're very vulnerable given the fact that President Trump has decided to work with Israel and attacking Iran. And that is a very serious issue. Most of us are sitting around here and absolutely horrified. And just for the simple fact that I hear Lindsey Graham talking about these issues, and I'm in agreement with him when it comes to the sleeper cell threat, I'm a little worried now, actually, that we're in agreement on that issue, that this is a very serious, serious threat. Probably the only thing I agree with him on. But I wanted to get to this clip. I want to play clip 13 because the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, was talking yesterday in regards to why we all of a sudden decided to attack Iran. And listen to his words very carefully. Take a listen to clip 13.
The second question that's been asked is, why now? Well, there's two reasons why now. The first is it was abundantly clear that if Iran came under attack by anyone, the United States or Israel or anyone, they were going to respond and respond against the United States. The orders had been delegated down to the field commanders. It was automatic. And in fact, it bared to be true because, in fact, within an hour of the initial attack on the leadership compound, the missile forces in the south and in the north, for that matter, had already been activated to launch. In fact, those had already been pre-positioned. The third is the assessment that was made that if we stood and waited for that attack to come first before we hit them, we would suffer much higher casualties. And so the president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties and perhaps even higher those killed. And then we would all be here answering questions about why we knew that and didn't act. Going back.
All right. Many are very worried about that response, given the fact we've heard it before. It sounds very familiar. It sounds like a flashback to the launch of the war in Iraq. Joining me to discuss is Anne Vandersteel. She's an information war correspondent. She's an incredible independent journalist. You can find her at Anne Vandersteel on X as well. Anne, always a pleasure to have you back on the show. I just wanted to get your initial reaction to the claims that are being made by Rubio there. Obviously, many people are very, very alarmed. We weren't very happy with what we saw over the weekend, and we're scratching our heads wondering why now. Your reaction?
Well, I mean, why now is, I guess, from where I'm sitting, it looks like it was more of a benefit to Israel. And I look mm-hmm. at everything through the financial lens, frankly, Brianna, and what it is happening and what has been unfolding in the Middle East since we got back in bed and getting into these Middle East foreign wars, going back to the first Gulf War. Wesley Clark was clear on that, 5 wars, 7 years, and frankly, focusing our military on these countries that are not part of our central banking system in the sense of, you know, using the SWIFT payment rails, et cetera, has been a bane of the existence of the Western central banking system. It's very clear that our system is monetized and is collateralizing the people in it in order to generate the amount of revenue and the amount of loans, and the amount of interest that it garners. But war is big business, and central banks have notoriously funded both sides of the wars. This goes back thousands of years. This is nothing new. Israel has always been the puppet for the central banking system. And when you look at historically the genetics of the people that are in Israel, that are also that established the city of London back in 1067, it is the same group of people using the same playbook over and over. And so to get in bed now, Iran, the playbook of their 5 minutes from a nuclear weapon has been used for 40 years, and it's a tired narrative. We see through that clearly now. I interviewed a lady yesterday whose family was part of the Iranian Revolution in the 70s, and they fled the country, came here, and have been successful here, but they're happy for the Iranian people that want freedom from an oppressive regime. And essentially, when the CIA and Mossad went in and MI6 went in and changed out the regime and the country's government, that was very successful, very westernized in the 50s, and installed the Shah, when he became not useful, they took him out and allowed an oppressive religious dogma, you know, dogma to take over in the mullahs. And, you know, essentially wiping out the mullahs is liberating for the people of Iran. But are the people of Iran ready to step in? My guess says yes, they're ready to step in. And they've been planning this for 47 years to step in and take their country back. I hope that in fact happens. But I also hope that they understand that, you know, as Iran is part of the BRICS countries that have set up their own payment rails outside the central banking system and are currently using sound money, as in gold, in addition to their basket of currencies to settle trade debts amongst trading partners in the BRICS countries. You know, Iran has an allegiance there. They've been getting the support militarily from China and Russia, part of their BRICS partners. Saudi Arabia has entered BRICS, and Saudi Arabia also straddles into the Gulf Cooperation Council in addition to the Board of Peace. So there's a lot sitting on this plate right now. And I think America was forced to jump in because they knew that Israel was going to push the narrative on behalf of the Western central banking cabal. And, you know, trying to get all the world and the global debt stabilized into what would be sound money is what part of this financial reset is. And there's no better way to expire a languishing financial system that's totally bankrupt than war. That is what we've done traditionally over centuries. So I really see this as a financial move. And Catherine Austin Fitz, frankly, echoes that narrative in a recent Tucker interview.
Yeah, I was actually going to play that next. It's clip 15. I want our audience to listen to it because specifically she's talking about the programmable money, and that's the real angle of her argument here. Let's take a listen.
Direction where the legislatures in every country are becoming less powerful, in many cases irrelevant.
So here's my theory, though. If you go back to 9/11, and when Wesley Clark said we're gonna invade seven countries in 5 years. What you were talking about were the countries where those central banks were not on board to do programmable money, and their governance structures were not on board with essentially, you know, because of Epstein, I'll call it the Rothschild model. There was an effort to say, okay, we're going to basically assert control of the central banks in those countries. That's my interpretation. And I think one of the reasons we're seeing so much tension around Iran is because Iran right now is the big leakage in the system.
How?
So,
wait, it's not about their nukes?
No. So, well, you know, Iran's central bank counts. One of the reasons it counts is because their oil and energy is very important, including for China.
Yeah.
And that's very important in the BRICS system. What the BRICS system is trying to do is to create independent payment systems. But if you're going to come out with programmable money, with digital IDs that are interoperable globally and programmable money that controls in each jurisdiction centrally, you can't afford leakage. And so you've got way too much leakage in the system to proceed with what they're trying to do. And Iran is, and the BRIC nations are a sticking point. And certainly Iran's oil, you know, feeding China gives China greater independence.
So you think that one of the motives behind toppling all these governments was the creation of the control grid we're talking about now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing, Anne, that you obviously are in agreement on. I'll let you take the floor from here since this was one of your sound bites that really got you fired up this morning.
Well, it's been getting me fired up, and I think it's been getting a lot of people fired up for quite some time. You know, the first thing that, President Trump did when he took office was stand on stage with Sam Altman and Keith Ellison from Oracle and Sam Altman from OpenAI. And this is, you know, troubling to say the least, considering that President Trump was also talking about using biometrics for border security on the campaign trail. And people, I don't think, really took in what he was saying about that. We apparently have been kettled like fish into this, you know, paradigm of a digital prison, mostly led by Peter Thiel and Palantir. And, yeah. You know, for the countries, I think Palantir has now been pretty well exposed as to doing exactly what it's doing, which is taking over all agency government, which I stand by every single day as unconstitutional. It's not defined in our constitution at all. You know, our federal government has grown way outside its scope, according to the founding fathers and the 19 essential services it's supposed to supply. So when you look at when you compare this to the decentralized model of the states have the authority to make decisions about these sorts of things, and you then flip it into the model we're now faced with, this digital prison is all part of the New World Order, which Catherine Austin Fitz, you know, stands up and says is something that is completely flies in the face of who we are as a country. And frankly, if you want to take it to the Bible, Brianna, it's really flies in the face of who God created us to be, free human beings on this planet. He didn't initiate, you know, kings and queens. This became a derivative of, you know, in my humble opinion, a lot of organized religion, which weaponized the idea that God needs leaders to disseminate information. And so, you know, from a holistic perspective, the world that we live in right now is not the world God intended. But if you look at it strictly from the government side, the government is instituting rails and guardrails, I should say, and prison sentences to all of us. And this war right now is who is going to be in control. And we're looking at a world war of oligarchs. You've got Putin, you've got Xi in China, and you have Trump in the East. Modi playing a supporting role because he does have over a billion people in his country. But who is going to be in control of this? And it always comes back to the war of trade routes and energy and goods and services. And Iran sits right in the middle of a very critical part of the world when it comes to these trade routes and energy flows. The Caspian Sea, Persian Gulf connection cannot be overlooked in a sense that the oil and natural gas pipelines that traverse that. And of course, the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, Iran is critical. It's right. It's like central to the juncture point of going into Western Europe and then exiting and going across the ocean into the Americas. So, you know, this is a continuation of the control that the central bankers have financed around the world using these trade routes and the central bankers that, you know, going back thousands of years that come from without sounding like I'm trying to make this about Semitism or unsemitism or anti-Semitism, it literally is an organization, a demographic of people that have disguised who they really are and what their real intentions are. And it connects right back into the State of Israel, formed in 1948, as well as the City of London and the Western banking, you know, cabal. Those two things are interchangeable, and Israel is using the narrative of anti-Semitism to weaponize the United States military, that if we don't stand up and fight for them, then we are anti-Semitic and that we are not part of God's chosen people. All of this is conflated out of a narrative that simply isn't the truth. And that's where we are wrestling right now, Brianna. It's a really huge conversation that you can't just have in a segment on a show. It's got to be really evaluated. And people need to do a lot more research, which is a lot of what I'm doing right now. I'm doing a lot of reading about the hidden hand of the banking system right now. And it comes back down to a group of people that really aren't who they say they are.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, Anne, I think a lot of people at home right now may be in a little bit of a disagreement on that issue. But I think that when it comes down to what the White House is doing right now, you know, everyone I speak to at the White House tells me that the core issue of this administration is the economy and boosting our economy. Yes. And getting the quickest correction of our economy as possible. I mean, obviously, we understand what happened during the Biden regime years. Our economy was obviously very heavily fractured. And so now the Trump administration is trying to fix it prior to midterms and get a win on the board. So there is that angle still there. And it's not totally crazy to think that that's a possibility, because again, I talk to folks in the administration all the time and they tell me, yeah, I want to do this, but I can't do this because right now the administration's focus is the economy, and we can't do certain things that might affect the economy right now in a negative way. So yeah, I could see this, you know, definitely being a great strong argument to be had on that front. And also, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, obviously the Israeli prime minister, yesterday was on with Sean Hannity. I thought it was really interesting in clip 14, specifically what he was saying. And many people, when they go out there, they like to feed into President Trump's ego a bit, and they give him a lot of flattering compliments. Mm-hmm. And it looked like that's what the Israeli prime minister was doing yesterday in clip 14. Take a listen.
Israel dragged Donald Trump into it. And as somebody that's been friends with him over 30 years, nobody drags Donald Trump into anything, number one. But I want to get your reaction to that.
Well, you're right. I mean, that's ridiculous. Donald Trump is the strongest leader in the world. He does what he thinks is right for America. He does also what he thinks is right for future generations. And frankly, we're partners in that effort, because I've devoted my life to securing the life of the one and only Jewish state. And believe me, it's been a struggle. I've known the pangs of war. I lost a brother in war and in battle. I myself fought terrorists and was wounded in liberating hostages from a hijacked plane. I held a fellow soldier in my arms when I was 18, and he died in my arms. I know the cost of war, but I know sometimes that war is necessary to protect us from the people who would destroy us.
So, Anne, here's the problem I have with all of this. Individuals like Benjamin Netanyahu have been pushing this Iranian threat for years now. We've gone back to the reel. We've played the clips over and over again. He continues to tell us that the threat is looming. And then we see what played out over the weekend. We have now 6 dead U.S. service members and 4 Americans who sat back and grew up during the Iraq war timeframe. You know, we didn't want this. We want all these Middle Eastern wars to end. For myself personally, I've just had enough of the influx after all these wars of refugees we have to bring in, and they're always Muslim refugees, and they're breaking down our society and destroying the Western lifestyle. And it's very heartbreaking here in Texas to see it firsthand. But you hear him again, feeding into the president's ego, obviously, and then saying that we had to do this to secure the state of Israel. I mean, this is so infuriating to hear time and time again, but this is why so many critics of Israel right now are saying that this war was unnecessary. Your thoughts?
I agree. I don't think this war was necessary at this point. I mean, when I look at what's necessary and we talk about the economy and making sure our economy is running, why are we sending money overseas? Why are we continuing to send aid overseas when we haven't even addressed the real problem in our country here, which are the American families, which are the homeless veterans, which are the people who are suffering from mental illness, who've had the state-run institutions, you know, taken away? Where is the help for the Americans? This is what we're not seeing right now. We're seeing two parents having to work to put food on the table to pay taxes because one can't do it all while the other stays home to do the heavy lift of raising, you know, little Johnny or little Susie, even if they're homeschooling. It is a lot of work to be a stay-at-home parent. I know, because I quit working to do it. And I thought, my God, I'd rather go back to the water cooler. This is a heck of a lot of work. Very rewarding, but the truth is the truth. And so, you know, continually having to step in and play the world's policemen around the world because nobody else wants to do it, it's akin to saying to a drug addict, look, I'm going to keep giving you the drugs, but you're the one that's going to have to get off. Well, you know, they're not going to get off because you're going to keep giving them the drugs. Well, if America keeps showing up and beating up your enemies for you, when are you going to stand up and take your enemies out? At this point, you know, when you look at the Straits of Hormuz, the American Navy can go over there and open those Straits of Hormuz today. We can keep it open. We've already put, I think, 10 Iranian ships at the bottom of the sea right now. They're now coral reefs for the fish. So it isn't about the military might. It's about who wants to step in and play the role of taking care of business, considering that Americans basically benefit 2% of what comes out of the Straits of Hormuz. So there's no real benefit over there for us. We have what we need right here. And I'm not talking about going full isolationist. What I'm talking about is leveraging what we have here. We put out 13 million barrels of oil a day. We are energy independent. We don't need to pull in other resources. We have everything we need in this country. We just haven't been putting the investment in the infrastructure to take what we have here out. And so we're way behind the curve on rare earth minerals. and substantiate and sustaining our needs for those rare earths into the different electronics, military applications, et cetera. That is a huge problem. And I know we can't do it all overnight, but the fact of the matter is we're seeing a lot of information, a lot of media focusing on what's going on over there. And if anything's going to hurt the midterm elections, it's the fact that we're not getting the attention that we need and the focus on Americans here. And that's what Americans want to see right now. They don't want to see Bibi Netanyahu, you know, laughing and yucking it up about how great President Trump is. How about President Trump show his greatness to the American people right now? And, you know, this leads into what Marjorie Taylor Greene was ranting on about yesterday on Megyn Kelly. And I think everything she said, she was spot on.
Yeah. And I want to also, I mean, we're going to play that clip too later in the show because she was fired up and rightfully so. I wanted to get to this angle, though, because you started alluding to it. You know, here in Texas, obviously, we do have several energy facilities, and Governor Greg Abbott now is forced to put on some extra patrols and to patrol the area. Now, here's the interesting factor in all of this. It's got a lot of us scratching our head wondering why all of a sudden he's doing this. I mean, I've known, anyone who's studied what's gone on in Texas understands that we brought in millions of Muslims into the area. And they've built up mosques all in big cities. Dallas, Houston, and Austin have been overtaken. And we could see that with the recent terror attack that went under, well, that happened over the weekend. But we just heard from the Secretary of DHS, Kristi Noem, who just outlined the threat directly. Kristi Noem, I've been asking about this for months now, saying that the Biden regime, in fact, did release hundreds, and I believe the number is even thousands, according to Joe Kent, of known and suspected terrorists into this country. They released them. But now DHS can't find them. And we got about 90 seconds in regards to the sleeper cell threat. How severe do you think it is?
I think it's incredibly severe. Just from my own eyes of what we know came across the border, Michael Yana, myself, and others doing Operation Burning Edge, we saw members of Tren de Aragua. We saw people coming out of Venezuela with Venezuelan passports that weren't Venezuelan. They were Iranian, part of Hezbollah. They had the, you know, they had the gang and the tattoos on their faces and other parts of their body that prove this. We know they were coming here not because they wanted to assimilate and create a better world for their family. No, they're here as sleeper cells, and we're starting to see them slowly get activated. I think our first taste was Tren de Aragua and what they showed when they flexed their muscle in Colorado and started taking over apartment buildings up there. That was a signal to us that we're not in control. We don't know who is here. And after 4 years of an open Biden, you know, the NCTC has, I think, identified around 18,000 known and suspected terrorism that the Biden admin let come into our country. Noem knows that ICE has arrested over 1,500 known suspected terrorists with more than 7,700 gang members that were allowed to come to this country. So if we have Customs and Border Protection, you know, talking about mass migration of these terrible people into our country, what does that tell you when we haven't rounded them all up and gotten them out of the country? This has got to be the focus. This is where we should be redirecting our resources. Tom Homan should be weaponized with every dollar he can possibly get his hands on to go around and get these people out of our country. That is the real threat here, not what's happening over in Iran. That is their threat right now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's true. It's true. And it's a scary one. Anne van der Steele, thank you for all the incredible work you do. You go to the most dangerous places to get the most accurate information. So we're honored to have you on the show. You and Michael Yon did a great job during the invasion, covering it from the jungle itself. And so it's always an honor to have you on the show to break all that down for us. Anne van der Steele, that's where you can find her on X, Anne van der Steele. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brianna.
All right, folks, I just got the alert over at thealexjonesstore.com. Right now, we've officially kicked off our mega sale for the month of March. You got to head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. It's 30 to 40% off almost every supplement, almost every supplement. So head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. We have an incredible sale going on right now. Discounts you haven't seen yet. It's happening. This just kicked off moments ago. We got the alert. It is officially the March mega sale over at thealexjonesstore.com. Snatch up all of your favorite supplements while supplies last over at thealexjonesstore.com. More on the way in just a second.
RFK Jr. mixes something into his drink, people pay attention. Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water? Methylene blue. Mel Gibson also praised methylene blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
A stimulant stimulates cells themselves to turn the cell up. This turns the energy up. That's why there's no letdown. That's why you can take this and go to sleep, too. But you sleep better on it, in my experience.
No, I really like it. I'm going to have to get on this stuff.
Here, show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
Our Methylene Blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene Blue works for me.
I just kind of feel like I'm sitting up straight more. I'm thinking more. The thoughts are coming in easier. I'm making decisions faster. And it really does. And it gives you clean energy.
When I'm talking, it seems like it's not really me talking. I can hear my talking and going, wow.
I agree. It's almost like an out-of-body experience. It's like you're behind yourself.
That is what it feels like. But my brain's going really fast.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
Yeah!
I feel more energetic. I feel more alive.
I found that within 30 minutes of taking it, I have improved focus, improved short-term memory, improved energy. But if I take it late in the day, it doesn't interfere with my ability to sleep, which is very rare for something like this. I get a tingly feeling in my fingertips. It's almost like it's improving my circulation.
I feel tingling fingers.
Methylene Blue radically increases glucose uptake in the brain. Okay. So it makes you better and more efficient at using your sugar. We all know the brain uses like 25% of the calories in the body or something crazy.
They've done studies that chess masters burn like 5,000 calories in a day in a tournament because they're so focused on directing energy to their mind as they're thinking so critically that it's like almost like an Olympic athlete.
Well, think about this stuff. It operates in a very similar way. That's the real thing Methylene Blue does. I really believe in this product. A lot of people have bought our Methylene Blue. Our Methylene Blue is incredible. I take it personally. But yeah, I mean, like, this is a solid product. Take this in the morning. A couple hours later, you'll experience the cognitive benefits of it.
I mean, it's so good, it's scary, it's just amazing. So yes, it really does work. It varies person to person, but it's amazing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. I must say that it does a damn good job.
99% of people that take it have between moderate to just insanely good effects. So good for your whole body.
Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up, so I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump.
With this, it's like in your head where you're like, you could feel it. Your body's a little tingly, but you're just more aware of what's going on.
I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff, so thank you, Alex. Keep it coming.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited to have you on board today. All right, there's a bit of breaking news coming in. Over on Fox News, it looks like the Iranian Supreme Council was holding a vote on their next supreme leader when apparently there was an interruption and it was Israel. Take a listen.
Of Tel Aviv, but I'm told by a senior Israeli official that the Israelis just struck the Supreme Council gathering where the Iranians were meeting to choose a new supreme leader. This is a significant development and again speaks to the Israeli intelligence about this war. They just targeted the meeting in Tehran where what's left of the leadership was gathering to choose a new supreme leader.
All right. Obviously, that is probably not the smartest thing to do if that report is true. They are not learning their lesson. They probably should start having Zoom meetings. Joining me to discuss is Captain John Conrad. He's the CEO of G Captain. He's also U.S. Merchant Marine and member of the Pentagon Press Pool. And John, that's where I had the pleasure of meeting you in person. So it's an honor to have you on the show today. So thank you for being here. I just want to get your initial reaction. You know, Iran's not learning their lesson. They keep doing these gatherings and keep meeting in person, and Israel just knows where they are, when they are going to meet up, and always knows when to strike. Your thoughts on that breaking news we just heard from Fox?
Yeah, there are some things that we've seen in the last 20 years we're not very good at, and one is these forever wars, these large extended army interventions with very strict rules of engagement and a million allies who all have different rules that handcuff our military. But there's some things the U.S. military is very good at. Intelligence, precision strikes, naval strike groups. And it seems that we have an excellent intel network, satellites in the sky, boots on the ground, who really have, the Iranian operations clocked. And of course, Israel and Mossad has been active in Iran for many, many years.
Yeah, yeah. And we're continuing to get the news as it develops. Obviously, this just happening over the last few minutes. John, I wanted to get your take on this because Vice President J.D. Vance spoke yesterday and issued a chilling warning to Iran in Clip 17. Let's take a listen.
Secretary Rubio and the president have both said something along the lines of, you ain't seen nothing yet. We can hit three times as hard. What does that mean?
Well, what it means, Jesse, is we have a lot of capacity here. I think there's a lot of chatter about what our objectives is, what our goal is. I mean, I think the president's been extremely clear about our objectives, and it's that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. But there's also been a lot of conversation about what are our capabilities. And look, I know this stuff. Obviously, I'm not going to reveal classified information here on air, but the president of the United States knows what we're able to do. He knows that we have much greater capacity to inflict damage on the Iranian nuclear program, but also on various missiles that threaten our troops. As you've seen, they've been launching those at our troops for much of the past 3 days. So I think the president has made it very clear that the United States has a lot of optionality here. And, you know, we could go for a little bit longer, we could go for a lot longer, but I think the president just wants to make it clear to the Iranians and to the world that he is not going to rest until he accomplishes that all-important objective of ensuring that Iran can't have a nuclear weapon, not just for the next few years, not just because we obliterated Fordow or some other enrichment facility, but because the Iranians themselves commit long-term to not building a nuclear weapon.
All right, John, obviously you alluded to at the top of all of this in regards to these forever wars, but the vice president not committing to a time frame as to how long these strikes will continue to be carried out. We also saw that from the Secretary of War, Mr. Pete Hegseth, yesterday as well. Your reaction to no one really giving us a time frame as to how long this will be carried out for, and we're seeing that it's only really kind of ramping up at this point.
Well, in any war, the first thing you learned when you go to these war colleges, and unfortunately many of them have become extremely woke, like the Naval Woke College up in Newport and these Army Command Colleges, Hegseth addressing that. But one thing they still teach you at these places is the enemy has a vote and Iran has a vote. And it really, the timeline depends on if the regime will step down, who will take power. But J.D. Vance is right. This is just the tip of the iceberg of our capabilities. Strong capabilities, but just two carrier strike groups. We have a lot more. A lot of these are in other places that are important, particularly, you know, in looking after China in the South China Sea, maintaining our obligations with Europe. A lot of them are home in maintenance period, but we have more carriers. Talk about carpet bombing. I have not seen any reports that we've even sent our B-52s and Marine Corps amphibious assaults. Maybe we don't want to do forever wars deep inland, but the Marines could definitely attack, the port regions near the choke points without getting into a forever war. So there are a lot more cards on the table for the United States indeed.
Yeah, we're going to continue to follow it all. I wanted to get to something that you think is not being covered at all, but you actually believe it's one of the more important issues in regards to this Iran story. You're talking about global insurance markets right now. Give us a little bit of details as to what you're alluding to, because you put up a tweet and it's gaining a lot of traction. I think this is important to highlight, but most importantly, tell us a little bit about, this is your area of expertise, so tell us how this is going to affect ships as well, shipping.
Yeah, I've been screaming about this into the wind for years on my website, gcaptain.com. We go deep into this, but we're one of the only maritime websites that is run and fully owned by the United States. Most of these other maritime news sites are owned by the Europeans. And as Europe gave up financing to Wall Street and technology to Silicon Valley and aviation to Boeing in Seattle, they have maintained an iron grip control over shipping. Why? Shipping controls 90% of all world trade. This is enormously important for us. The largest shipping companies in the world are Maersk, up in Denmark. We've seen the trouble with Denmark and Greenland recently. You have CMA CGM in France and Mediterranean Shipping Company in Switzerland. But the absolute hub of this is London, as London kind of has faded away in global importance. They have maintained a strict control over this maritime regulation. They host the UN International Maritime Organization, which is right down the block from MI6. And a little ways down the river is Lloyd's of London, which is the critical insurance market, insures about 40% of world trade, but insures ports and airports and skyscrapers and you name it, they insure it, but they also do the reinsurance market. So as you, as a insurance company provides insurance for ships, that insurance company will be reinsured. And that is typically by Lloyd's in London or one of the other London subsidiaries. And the question people have had for decades, insiders in the insurance, is how are they so good at determining these rates? They can often give rates on some things lower than anyone else in the world. And then they've gotten so good at it, even if you buy insurance from a New York or Japanese insurance company, often you'll get a quote from Lloyd's List and other insurance companies will match that quote. Well, you know, there's been a lot of suspicion over the years. Is it because of Five Eyes? Five Eyes is the world's premier intelligence network, and it's the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and UK, all Commonwealth countries against the United States. There is a pipeline from the CIA, from the NSA, straight into this MI6 UK intelligence in London, which is right down the you know, a couple buildings away from the International UN Maritime Organization that regulates all these shipping, and very close to this Lloyd's List. So are they giving these rates on insurance because they are tied into the U.S. intelligence, the CIA's computer? There's a lot of evidence to believe so. But the question is, it seems today from the press conferences and Keir Starmer, from the just U.K. forces not being prepositioned, not being ready for this, that we did not tell our allies that this strike was going to go on. And you look at the Maduro raid, we did not inform our allies to that. So you got to ask, are those intelligence signals from the CIA, NSA, FBI going straight to London? And have those subsea cables gone dark? And if they are, it's not just a question of insurance. Because we have all of these ships, hundreds of ships in the Persian Gulf right now stranded. Why are they stranded? The U.S. says that the Strait of Hormuz is open. Iran says it's closed. But the real question is, can they get insurance? And we've seen marine insurers cancel policies. They've canceled war risk insurance policies in the Persian Gulf, which were unprecedented. They didn't even cancel insurance for ships going into Ukraine at the height of the Ukraine-Russia war. So something very strange is happening here. And my hypothesis is it is Lloyd's List and these insurance companies don't have, they've been cut off from this intelligence network access.
Yeah, well, I was actually going to ask as a follow-up what your thoughts were, because initially when these attacks were being carried out, we did receive reports that the UK was unwilling to allow the United States to use their bases to strike. Do you think all of this is related as a whole, or do you think they were upset that they weren't given intelligence prior to all of these attacks being launched?
Well, I think it's the primary problem is the woke governments in the UK and other European nations. We've seen unprecedented moves. A couple years ago, Spain said that they would not let a U.S. merchant marine ship into a port to refuel near Gibraltar. The U.K. pushed it off to Spain. Spain said no. For a U.S. flagged ship to not be allowed, this is a civilian ship. It was carrying some military equipment, and some of it was presumed to go to Israel, but to not allow a U.S. flagged ship, and we don't have many. We only have 82 in international service right now. China and these European countries control the most of ships. But for an ally not to allow a U.S. ship, and now with the U.K., Diego Garcia, they are giving it away to the to locals and Mauritian, this woke ideology that we have to return the land. Well, that's our most important Navy and Air Force base in the entire Indian Ocean. It's a lot closer to send B-2 bombers from Diego Garcia to Iraq than have to bring them all the way from a European base in Germany like Ramstein or the United States. So the fact that the UK would not provide this and now looks to be selling off this land from underneath the U.S. Navy lease. They say they're going to maintain the lease, but now they're saying we can only use this base to hit missiles that are being sent at other Middle Eastern countries. Again, it goes back to the Europeans said, oh, the United States is responsible for these forever wars. But you've been in the Pentagon. We've talked to Army colonels. We've talked to Army majors. They've all said that they had these very strict rules, these JAG rules. The lawyers come in and tell them who they can shoot, when they can shoot, when they cannot shoot. Do they have to be shot first? Do they have to shoot last? You know, a lot of times they have these enemies hiding in schools and hospitals, and we can't attack them. Well, because each of these allies, France, Germany, UK, when they come into a war, they set their own rules. And now the UK is setting its own rules for this Diego Garcia. And it makes you really see what Donald Trump was saying about Greenland. Denmark says, hey, we'll let you use the base whenever you want. But when the war actually happens, is Denmark going to set a rule for that? Same thing with Panama. Panama has ejected China from the canal after Hegseth went down and made an agreement. But if when Jimmy Carter gave away that canal, you have to wonder, what is the foreign influence? We had the Panama Papers really linking these globalists to that UN International Maritime Organization. Wasn't a big story in the United States. You guys covered it, but all of the dark money and the tax fraud and everything else, it's Cayman Islands, Bahamas, it's all these Commonwealth countries that are tied to UK foreign intelligence, which is tied to our intelligence. This all came out. You can look, I think it was 2014, 16, all of these Panama papers were released. It's all tied back to the UK and the lawyer who started the Panama paper law firm, which is funding drug cartels and mafia and all of these illicit activities. The founder of that law firm was at the International Maritime Organization in London. And now you see these same organizations canceling shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. Is this political? Is it geopolitical? Is it U.S. against our allies? There are so many questions here. But the bigger implication is for the broader insurance market. If they start cutting contracts to ensure other things around the world, not just ships.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep our eye to this. John Conrad, thank you for joining us today. This is really interesting, and I'm sure we're going to have you back on later this week because it's obviously still developing, and there's so much news flooding in. So we appreciate all the incredible work that you're doing. Again, to our audience, give him a follow on X as well if you want to stay in the loop. He does great work over at John Conrad. That is K-O-N-R-A-D. John, thank you so much for joining me today. We greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, as always, folks. I'm keeping my ear right now to Kristi Noem right now, who is testifying in front of the Senate right now. And it's quite interesting because they are talking about the Homeland Security funding. As many of you know, I've been reporting it extensively. There is a partial shutdown going on right now, which probably isn't a great time to strike a country like Iran. And she is speaking. Chris Coons, the senator from Delaware, he's a Democrat. He also has taken the mic and his time has just started. Let's listen back in.
Higher and higher numbers for deportation, the mass deportations that Stephen Miller designed and President Trump has ordered you to implement. It's why we have roving patrols, racially profiling whomever they see and creating a show me your papers state. It's why you go into sensitive locations like churches and hospitals and schools. It's why you have been arresting children, the elderly, refugees, the disabled, including a resident in my own state suffering from severe developmental disabilities. When there's pressure on you to hit high numbers, you don't have the time to focus on targeted care, targeted effects to find violent criminals on the run. It's easier to simply round up people here, breaking no laws and contributing to our communities. It's why you deny people due process and rush them out of the country. And it's why you've put poorly trained ICE recruits on our streets, engaging in reckless and dangerous tactics. Does DHS, Madam Secretary, operate on any quotas or numerical targets for immigration arrests every day?
No, Senator, we do not. We do targeted law enforcement operations going after those worst of the worst criminals that are here illegally.
I would certainly prefer it if you did targeted operations against the worst of the worst. But just last year, Stephen Miller, who's the president's Homeland Security advisor and deputy chief of staff, went on Fox News and said, we're setting a goal, a minimum of 3,000 arrests for ICE every day. And President Trump is going to keep pushing to get that number higher and higher. He's the deputy chief of staff and Homeland Security advisor, and he oversees immigration policy for the president. What's your response to his public quote?
Sir, there is no quotas at the Department of Homeland Security. When we do law enforcement operations, we do them on targeted enforcement, getting public safety threats off of our streets and out of our communities to protect the American people.
Thank you. And you agree that setting quotas would actually put improper pressure on law enforcement to conduct themselves in ways that might not be in the best interest of their safety or the public?
Senator, we don't have any quotas on our law enforcement operations.
Have you ever issued any guidance rejecting the use of numerical targets or quotas?
I usually put out notices on things that are impacting our operations. There's been no discussion or requirement on numerical quota targets. Therefore, there would be no need to reject them in a memo unless I feared that they were being implemented, which they're not.
Ma'am, here's why I think there might be real value in your putting out a memo saying, I reject any quotas. It's not just what Stephen Miller said last May. He's reportedly, and I have many press accounts of this I can submit for the record, making conference calls, berating agency officials, threatening to fire them, threatening to fire the leadership of field offices that are in the bottom 10% of arrest numbers. I would suggest that it's this constant drive for higher numbers that has been behind a lot of what we've been seeing in terms of the failure to actually focus on the worst of the worst and targeted enforcement and to instead do things like roving patrols and profiling. Let's move on. Steve Bannon, long an advisor to the president, one of his earliest public supporters, recently said that ICE should be deployed at the polls in the next election. Will you rule out the deployment of ICE or CBP to polling places this November?
There are no plans to have ICE officers at our polling locations. And
I'm glad to hear that, but would you rule it out? Would you say it will not happen?
Do you plan on illegal aliens voting in our elections, Senator?
I do not. In fact,
then there should be no need to, unless you plan on illegal aliens voting.
Madam Secretary, the Heritage Foundation recently concluded that over a 20-year period where they reviewed hundreds of millions, billions of voting cases, they found only a small handful of actual cases of illegals voting. So I'm concerned by your rebuttal.
Take that back now. I wanted to make sure we got to some updates throughout the show today. And we'll be dipping in and out of that, of course, as it continues on. But I want to get to clip six because it has to do with that terror attack that took place in Austin, Texas. And I think it's quite strange how both the Austin Police Department and the FBI, both agencies are refusing to tell the American people what the motive was behind that terror attack. Take a listen.
And I think it was reported that the suspect had a shirt underneath the sweatshirt that showed an Iranian flag. Is there a direct connection to the war in Iran with the shooting here.
So I think for our purposes, you know, as we're, you know, looking at the totality of this, and certainly as a police chief, and we're coming in and we're getting this information, and we see those indicators, we see, you know, the second shirt with the Iran and the picture of the Shah on that T-shirt as well. You know, we're thinking about events and what's occurring in the country as well. And so, in addition to the fact that this was a huge, complex scene, we're calling in those federal partners to take a look at that as well. And so, again, those the motives, all of those things, that's what this investigation is about right now.
I don't mind.
Oh, sure. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Thank you. So I'll add on that. But first, I just want to also express our regards for the victims' families, those impacted by this tragic event. It's not just those that were injured or killed, but obviously those that witnessed it are going to be forever impacted. And so just let them know we stand with you, and our thoughts are with you. With regards to the question, yes, our ultimate goal in everything we do is to determine the motive, right? We're looking for connections that he possibly had, witnesses, as the chief had mentioned. We are pouring through thousands of hours of video. We have massive amounts of both digital and physical evidence. And this is a around-the-clock, 24-hour investigation at this point. And any declarations on what led to that motive would be premature, right? We want to make sure that we have our facts 100% correct, or as close to, or at least we've tracked down every possible lead that we can, because that's what we owe to the victims, right? That's what you guys want answers for, but more importantly, we owe that to the victims and their families to be right. So we don't want to speculate or make any guesses at this stage of the investigation as to what that motive ultimately was.
Well, I'm willing to speculate, so let me jump in on this. All you have to do is look at the evidence that's come out. And so let's speculate a little bit. When you look at the T-shirt that the individual was wearing, there was this hoodie and there was a shirt underneath that hoodie. It's quite clear what his motives were. He was wearing a hoodie that stated property of Allah. And underneath that hoodie, according to these leaked images that you're about to see on your screen, the image of the T-shirt that was underneath it, it's the Iranian flag. So before you tell me we don't exactly have motive, I would probably beg to differ on that front, because I think it's very, very clear as to where he was going with all of this, what his big motive was. He told you twice. And then when he went to his home, you saw there was an Iranian flag on his social media accounts. There was the Supreme Leader, his image there. So it's fair to say that there's motive here. But whether or not these agencies actually want to admit what the motive was, well, of course, you can't piss off the jihadist. I would hate to do just that. All right, folks, got a lot more to discuss in just a little bit. We're going to keep our eye on to Kristi Noem's testimony that's going on right now in Congress. In the meantime, though, I was very excited about this. The Marsh Mega Sale has officially kicked off over at thealexjonesstore.com. It's 30 to 40% off some of our supplements, almost every supplement, I should say, over at thealexjonesstore.com. So now's the time to stock up on your favorite supplements. And it's only going to last for a couple more days. So you got to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com right this very second. And on top of those savings, in case you need an extra little push to get you over to the shop, we also have 25% off apparel that includes hats, T-shirts, and hoodies. 25% off. Now that sale is only going to last a couple of more hours because it ends tomorrow. So now is the best time to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com and stock up before it is too late. And just a little friendly reminder, when you support us over at thealexjonesstore.com, you help us stay up and running, and we are grateful for that. So don't go anywhere. More to come.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it, I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something, what a blessing.
I do subscribe to the Methylene Blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like you said, I've been taking the Methylene Blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the Methylene Blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at theolivechildstore.com.